It's a little bit of a different style for me. Usually I'm just in a book of the Bible, kind of going exegetically through that, much more of a preaching mode. This is more teaching. So we'll be there for another few weeks before we get back to that. But just so that you know, there's a lot of information that's coming. We're trying to kind of open your eyes to some new things from there. Just give you some good, solid information. And we repeat a lot of things week to week with the goal that it really becomes ingrained within you. Any good teacher would want you to eventually take that material into yourself and be able to do something with it. So my hope is that by the time we're done with this series, you will understand boundaries well. You will have them in your life, and you will have operational ways of kind of building and working from those things too. So let's start with prayer. Jesus, we thank you for your presence here right now. And you are so much more important, God, than my words, than the music that we have or anything else. And so we ask that you would come and truly speak to our hearts. Whatever I have that's off base, you can move aside. And I pray that you would speak health and strength over our relationships as you bless us today. Amen. So I want to start back at the very beginning, right? Genesis chapter 1. And get a sense of how boundaries function even in that kind of place. In the beginning, right, God created the heavens and the earth, and then God speaks. And what does God say? Let there be light, right? That's what he says, the first thing that he communicates. So he gives this identity, and when you have an identity, then you have boundaries that go with that. We've already talked about that. Boundaries are there to separate us from other people. We're not the same as other people around us. There's boundaries that say, I am a unique individual, you're a unique individual, etc. So when God creates in Genesis 1, he's putting boundaries everywhere because he's giving identity. He creates the light, and the very next thing he does is puts a boundary. He says, light is here and darkness is over here. Here's a boundary between the two. Day 2, he comes in and says, hey, we've got sky as a boundary between the water and everything else that goes on around it. Day 3, there's a boundary between the land and the waters. And on and on and on, all the way through it goes. Every time boundaries are put up, there is an identity that is encased within that. I am water, you are land. I am sky, you are the waters here. I am light, you are dark. All those kinds of things are just boundaries that exist. It's beyond human relationships. Any identity that comes has boundaries around it that makes it unique, right? Even a number like 2 has boundaries around it, so we know it's not a 3, it's not an 8, it's not a whatever else it is. It's a unique number, and that allows it to have its own identity. As Genesis goes on then, when we have an identity, then we have responsibility that comes with that. Once you know who you are, then there's a responsibility that comes, and that's true for everything. Even the created order has that. So God makes the stars, he makes the sun, he makes the moon, and then he gives them a responsibility. He says, you are there to create order and to give a sense of time, to keep the seasons and the days and the years. He creates the animals and says, you are there to reproduce. He creates man and says, you are there to have dominion over the world, to fill the world, to manage it well. He gives a challenge to Adam to have a responsibility to name the animals as part of that dominion that goes on. So when there is responsibility, then there's a power to fulfill it. God granted to the heavens the ability to track time and organize that. They've done well with that. He grants to animals the ability to reproduce. He grants to us as humans the ability to manage, the power to manage the world around us. And so all of those things flow together. And when you have your own unique identity and you have your responsibility and use your power to fulfill your responsibility, what comes naturally is honor. The end of chapter 1, God says, all of this is very good. And the end of chapter 2 is a really powerful statement, right? Adam is there, Eve is created, they are brought together in marriage, and then God says, they were naked and they knew, does anyone know what it is? 2 words? No shame. It's a really unique experience for humanity. Only time in all of human experience that people have been there without any shame whatsoever. Every one of their responsibilities fulfilled perfectly that God has created and ordered them to do. So they have no shame. They just have honor. That comes naturally into our lives. This order, as simple as it is really clear. These are the things that having boundaries do for us. When you have boundaries in your life, then you have an identity and you know who you are. If you're uncertain who you really are and that's unclear for you, then you probably don't have good boundaries. And with that comes responsibility. Here are things that you should do with this identity that you have. And there's power that comes along with that. And then when all of those things are met together, there is honor. God wants us to be honored. He created you to be honored, and this is the pathway that gets us there. Everybody needs honor. It's a legitimate thing to hunger after. And when we know ourselves and we use our power to fulfill our responsibilities, honor comes naturally. It's a gift that God wants us to have in our life, and this is the pathway to get to that. If you have responsibilities and don't fulfill them, then shame comes and lack of honor comes into those situations. We want to focus today, though, on that place of power and kind of identifying the power that we do have in our lives and recognizing where it is when we don't have full power for things, too. So as we look at power specifically, power requires, if it's legitimate, that you have your boundaries and responsibilities, etc., in place already. If you don't have responsibilities in your identity, you don't have legitimate power. If you have a 16-year-old kid, right, you give a car to the 16-year-old kid, you have given him power, right? To have legitimate power, he has to have responsibility too. So if he comes back and the car is scraped up and you're like, ah, never mind, I'll pay for it and fix it, you've taken responsibility away, so you've given power but no responsibility, which means his identity is unclear and the boundaries are messed up, right? We recognize that if there's real power, there has to be a responsibility that comes with it. Yes, you have a car, you can drive with it. And then you have the responsibility for how you do. If you drive and you don't have any accidents and you drive well, then you have honor as a good driver, right? A safe driver. And if you have accidents and cause problems, then you have the dishonor and the shame that comes with that. That's the responsibility that flows along. You have a 4-year-old kid, right, that wants the responsibility of dressing themselves, right? They want that power in their life. Then they have the responsibility if they're going to be cold. Right, if they get to choose what they wear and they want that power over their wardrobe, then they have the responsibility to say, I may be cold at times, I may be warm at times, right? But you have to give that to them. If you try to control that, then you're diminishing the boundaries that they have as a unique individual. If they want that power, then they have the responsibility that comes along with it. So boundaries tie into that place of power. Power does not exist without the boundaries around it, not in a healthy way. And we want that healthy power. A power does also not exceed your backpack. So we have these two core ideas of backpack and boulders. Backpack is whatever is legitimately within your boundaries, right? So whatever is a part of you is your own identity, your emotions, your body, who can touch it, who can't, your feelings, your choices, your values, your desires, all of that is inside your backpack. That is what you have power over. That is where you legitimately can express your power in the world around us. Right? That's where you focus your power. After a lacrosse game yesterday, one of my daughters came to me, and she actually quoted Jesus. She said, I need to work on taking the log out of my own eye before I worry about the splinters in others. And she said, here is what I need to work on to be better at lacrosse. She said, I can't change my teammates. I can't make them better players. I can't affect them, right? So she understood, this is my backpack. This is where I have power. I can change how I play. I can change what I understand. I can work on these skills. I can't fix my teammates. I can encourage them, etc., those things, but I can't change them. This is my backpack. That's where my power lies. And that's the beauty even of that expression Jesus gives us, right? To take the log out of your own eye. That's where you have power. You may be annoyed at splinters in other people's eyes, but you don't have any legitimate power to remove them. But the log in your own eye, yeah, that is your responsibility, and you have power to change what that is. So this is the realm that our power exists in. It does not ever go outside of your backpack unless it is welcomed. So this is where things get messy, because there are times that people will invite you into their backpack and say, hey, can you help me with this? There are times that that is legitimate. All of us live in relationship and community, and other people need to come in and help us figure out our emotions, help us make good choices, help us reprioritize in our own life. All of that happens. But also, it can happen in bad ways, where people get manipulative and try to control things inside of us. So the next couple weeks, we'll take some time to figure out how do we express ourselves in someone else's backpack when they allow it in legitimate ways, and then get back out again. We'll have some good rules and guidelines about how that works. For right now, though, we recognize that only when someone welcomes me, and only for a limited amount of time, for a limited purpose, do I ever exert power in someone else's backpack. Really good lesson to learn, right? I do not have power over their life. I can't control it. If they welcome me and open the gate, maybe there's a legitimate role for me in there. But otherwise, I stay back out because that's not where my power is. It's not where it exists. Power, though, is a gift of God. It's rooted in our own creation, right? We are made in the image of God. God is a powerful God and grants power to us as well, which means that this is a universal gift. Nobody is lacking in that. And nobody has the right to take your power away from you. Nobody can tell you how to think. Nobody can tell you how to feel. Nobody can tell you the choices that you make. I don't have that right. There's no pastor that does. There's no leader. There's no husband that has that power over a wife, right? None of those things exist, right? You have in your own backpack, your own stuff, your own responsibility, your own power. And that's a God-given gift. Nobody else can take that away from you. What I would love for you to see this morning is how absolutely incredible and precious that is. I think as a church, we tend to focus much more on being powerless than on being powerful. And probably the message we hear more often in church is what we're unable to do and where we're weak than where we're strong. But I think to be legitimate biblically, God also, we'll talk about weakness, we'll deal with some of that today too. But legitimately, God says, I made you strong, I've made you with ability, I've made you with power, I've made you to express yourself in this way. And I want you just to drink deeply of that and to be able to revel in that and enjoy that and feel that power coursing through your body because God has placed it there, right? You have the power to change your attitude. Nobody else has that power. But you do. You can make it whatever you want it to be. And then you can make your life, reflect all those kinds of things. You have the power to choose your actions. You have the power to respond to whatever feeling crops up in your life and choose how you're going to do that. You have the power to heal. You have the power to be a blessing to others. You have an immense ability to impact both yourself and, by healing and blessing and giving, other people around you. You, because you are a powerful being, get to write your life story every day. It is not pre-written for you. It's not some template that you just make your way through and you're powerless to make any changes about. You have incredible power every day about the person that you are going to be that day and the relationships you're going to have with people around you. I want you to understand that, to receive that. It's an amazing gift from God. Right? You are not a robot. You're not an automaton. You have this freedom and this power around you because God's offered it to you. He doesn't dictate and control you. It's an amazing kind of thing that he gives. And so maybe at a simple level, if you can walk away today and recognize that I have this power in my life, with it responsibility, which is often why we don't like the power. But those things go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. You never have power without responsibility. Right? I think Spider-Man said something about that, but for another day, right? So here is this gift that God gives to us, this incredible power to write our own story every day. There are, however, moments where we feel powerless. And that's a pretty consistent human experience. If you've been around long enough, there's been a moment or two in life where you said, I feel powerless in this moment. And I want to give you kind of a checklist to say, what do I respond in that moment? How do I deal with that based on the fact that God has granted power to me? The first question you have when you feel powerless is, am I feeling powerless about my own backpack? If you're married, there has been a moment, I guarantee, that you have been powerless to change your spouse. If you have kids, there are so many moments that you are powerless. Like, you're just like, oh, I can see the right path, just make this choice. How hard, just go this direction, right? With all of our love, all of our wisdom, all of our insight, just make the right choice, and we are absolutely powerless. Right? But that's a legitimate powerlessness because it's not your backpack. It's not your identity. It's not who you are. You don't get to make those choices. Otherwise, you're trying to control someone else, and that's not a healthy relationship. And so that powerlessness is frustrating. I grant you that. But it's just reality. And to recognize that I am powerless over other people, their reactions to me, whether they like me or don't like me, whether they follow my advice or not, yes, we are all powerless because that's outside of our backpack, that's outside of our own boundaries, and that's the way God's made it to be. It's not wrong. It is right that you are powerless in those arenas. God still has power there because everything is in his backpack, right? So check that, and we'll get back to that as we move on. So God can have power in all those arenas. You don't. So you may not be able to change your child. You may not be able to change your spouse, but God can. He has a proper role in that. You don't. Understand that distinction, right? So if it is in your backpack and you realize that, then the next question you have to ask yourself is this really about power? Most of the times that we say, I can't, what we really mean is, I don't want to, or I don't know how. Ever so rarely is it really about power, that I really am not able to. A lot of the time it's like, I really don't want to. Find me another path. Find me another answer, because I'm not satisfied with that one. Or, I don't even really know how to get there. And those are different kind of questions to ask, right? Those are questions of motivation. We'll deal with that in the next week or two. Questions of even understanding of things, but very different than, do I have the power to do this? But if you find situations in your life, and we all do, where you say, legitimately, this is in my backpack, this is me, these are my emotions, thought, feeling, body, life, experience, those kinds of things, and I really, as much as I want to see something different, I can't. Right, then we have what we've talked about before. We have a boulder. Right? So a boulder is something that, yeah, you have some responsibility for. It does connect into your life, but is too big for you to carry. You can carry a backpack. That's legitimate. Nobody thinks that's crazy for you to carry a backpack or a purse or whatever else you want around with you. You can carry that. You cannot carry a boulder. Way too big for you, right? So a boulder is what happens when there's something that comes in your life that you don't have full power over. And those are legitimate human experiences, happen all the time. So where does our power intersect in that moment when we feel powerless? Right? So here's kind of a sense of what we do in that moment. And we are powerless, and boulders come in a lot of different shapes and forms. Like one of those, and that's the one that David deals with in the reading that we have, is the powerlessness of sin. Right? So Ephesians 2 verse 1 says that we are dead in our trespasses and sins. So death is a nice metaphor for being without power. That's what it means when your body doesn't have power anymore. It's dead, right? It has no more power to pump your blood. It has no more power to breathe, no more power for your head. That is the definition of death, the lack of power in your body. So when the Bible uses that metaphor, it says that because of sin, we lack any power to overwhelm our sinful nature. We can see that it's wrong, we can see that it's there, but we don't have the power to overcome it on our own, right? So we're powerless in that nature. That's where David goes. We'll look at it certainly from that biblical viewpoint. But these same things apply anywhere you lack power, right? Are you put on a team, maybe at school or maybe in a work project, right? You have to work together to make this thing happen. There's a whole bunch of backpacks there, and they're not all yours. And you lack power, right? You can't make the other kids do their work too. You can't make your other coworkers contribute equally and carry their full weight of things. You can try to climb into their backpack and do their work for them, but it never fully works as well as you wish that it would, right? So you lack power in that moment. You face something in life like maybe depression, right? I lack the power to overwhelm this. I don't have the ability to get out of this hole that I find myself in, this emotional pit that I've wandered into. Addictions can be those places. Like, I don't have the power to change gambling, to stop doing that, to change looking up those things on the internet, to change the alcohol, whatever those other things are. All right? There's a whole list of those things that we feel like we don't have power. I don't have power to pay my bills. I don't have power to meet my financial requirements. I don't have power, maybe even on the political process, right? You can look at where things are in our nation and where politics are going and recognize I don't have the power. Maybe you're totally happy with the way things are right now. But if you're like most of the rest of us, you're like, I could see some changes that might happen. And I lack full power to make those things happen. What I want you to see is that even when you face a boulder, it doesn't mean that you are completely without power. You are never fully powerless, even when there is a boulder. And it's recognizing, where do I have a place to respond, even with something that large in my life? So David walks us through that. He starts first by saying, what we can do first is to examine ourselves and identify and say, hey, this boulder really does exist. He starts in verse 13 by saying, I am a sinner. This whole thing about keeping myself pure and honoring that marriage relationship Bathsheba had with Uriah, that was in my backpack. That was my responsibility to take care of, and I didn't do it. In AA, what is the first step? We admitted we were powerless, and our lives have become unmanageable, unable to be controlled. All right, but even in AA, that's a statement of power. It's not full power. I recognize I'm not getting past alcohol, but what it does say is I can at least recognize this is the problem. And I've made the choices that have brought me to this place that this addiction lies within me. Maybe I can't get out of depression, but I can recognize I am depressed right now and unable to process all that. That's a huge step forward. You know, to look at your bills and say, hey, I'm not going to live in the shadows anymore and just hope at the end of the month something different happens. I can see it weeks ahead of time, and I see it's not going to come together, and I won't have enough money. And I just raise my hand and acknowledge, I haven't prepared myself well enough to face this responsibility. And here's where David digs in deeper. It's not just stating a truth, but really examining ourselves. Not just saying, hey, I don't have enough money this month, but being able to say, do I bear any responsibility for not having enough money this month? A lot of times when those requests are made, there is a presumption that most of the responsibility is on other people. I got my hours cut here, this happened over here, I couldn't foresee this, this happened around here, right? So there's this point, you do have the power to examine internally and say, is it at all because of choices that I've made that I find myself in this place? Right? This doesn't mean you can pay things for the month, but at least you're saying, here's where I do have power. It's in my own backpack. These are the choices I've made. I can identify this is where it is. Maybe I can't fix my marriage right now. It's way too broken for that, but I can recognize these are the things that I did that made it worse, that made it hurt. And I can own and identify that truth. That's part of the power that we have. The second place in our power that David models for us is that we can ask for help. Right, that's what he does. Hey, I'm facing this big thing. My son is about to die. I'm going to go to you, and I'm going to begin to ask for help. This is prayer. All right, prayer is just this common, everyday part of our Christian life, and this is what it is. Prayer is, I found a boulder in my life, something too big for me to face, and I'm not going to go it on my own, but I'm going to invite someone else who has power to be a part of that. So I'm asking God to come into my boundaries, into my backpack, and say, God, this is too big for me. Will you help be a part of that? We invite God into other people's backpacks too through prayer, right? We pray for someone else who's in need. We're not going in their backpack, but we're saying, God, I want to invite you to go in there because it seems like it's a boulder and too big for them. Will you go and be a part of helping them in that process? I can't cross that boundary on my own, but it's in God's boundaries, and so he can cross it anytime he wants to. But that's what prayer does. That's us saying, God, I'm going to open the gate to my own emotions and feelings and thoughts and actions because they're bigger than what I can control. And I'm going to welcome you into my boundaries, into my backpack, so that you can help me figure things out and change and make the choices I need to make. That's where prayer is, right? But we can invite other people into those boundaries too. When you invite God into your boundaries or into your backpack, he is a completely safe individual. He will never manipulate you. He will never use you. He will never lie to you. He'll never exert too much authority in there. He is absolutely honorable and safe. Not always true with other people. All of us can probably think of some moment or experience where we were vulnerable, needed some help, and we opened up our heart and got hurt because somebody who came in didn't fully respect the boundaries that we had, didn't fully respect who we are. If you've been married, that's happened. Just has, right? And we forgive it, we move on from it, but no human being is fully safe to be around. That's kind of the challenge and richness of what marriage is about. So recognize that when you are inviting another human being in, and you're like, I have this boulder, it's bigger than me, I've invited God, but I need to invite a human being in too. You want to be thoughtful and process and say, who is it that's safe that I can trust? We don't always make the right choice, but that's our aim. Right, to find safe individuals that we can include within there. And then, and we'll talk more about this in the weeks to come, we invite them in with a limited arrangement, right? They don't have free range over everything. God can do that. People can't. Like you go to a counselor, right? You go to the counselor because to some degree, I can't see myself perfectly. But the counselor can't fix your life. All they can do is help you to understand some of those things that you, again, then have responsibility for, to say, now I need to act on what I now see and understand. So we can identify what we see to be true and recognize that. We can ask for help. We can also act. And even though you may not be able to change the boulder, you can still act in the middle of your circumstances. David does that by choosing to go and worship God, by choosing to go and comfort his wife Bathsheba. So even when he's hurting, it doesn't limit his ability to help other people. That's sometimes a lie that we have, like I'm so powerless that there's nothing I can do anywhere. It's not true. You may be powerless in an arena or two or an area or two, but there's other places that you have full freedom to act. Rarely is anybody ever fully powerless. That's usually when you're in a coma, right? There's something you can do somewhere. And sometimes it's when those giving and sharing moments with others that we have the greatest impact on some of the burdens that we carry too. Finally, what David models for us is that we can set boundaries. We always have the power to set boundaries. When he's through with his grieving, or when he's grieving and his son dies, he then finds out and he gets up, he goes and worships God, takes a bath, eats a good meal, hangs out with his wife, like not the normal things you think of for grieving. And so people around there are trying to say, hey, you're grieving the wrong way. Right? So they're trying to step inside of David's boundaries and say, you're not doing this right. But David, even though he's weak and vulnerable, is able to have solid boundaries and say, no, I can own my own grief. I can choose how I want to grieve. And I did this other grieving before my son was alive, and now that he's gone, I have full freedom to choose how I will grieve, right? So sometimes when we're really vulnerable and we let people in, we forget to build the boundaries back again or forget to lock the gate or close it again. And some people that are naturally helping and want to be a part of things and have a lot of good advice to give see the open gate and they just walk right on through. And they just begin to put up other things. You have to close the gate again. No, this is me. I get to choose how I grieve. You can share with me your own grief experience. You can offer advice about that, but I get to choose whether I take it, whether it matches for me. Right? So we can set our own boundaries in that too. All of that for us to kind of recognize that even when we face boulders that are bigger than what we can understand and deal with, there are places for us to use our power in response to that. We are never completely powerless. What I'd like for you to do right now is to examine your own heart. We're kind of tying up the message. I want to give you a way to apply this. Just look inside your own life and say, where do I find those boulders where I lack power? What am I facing in my own life that is just too big for me to find my way through? And then I want to invite you to do the first two steps that we talked about. The first thing is just to acknowledge and say, you know what, God, this is bigger than me. I can't find my way through this class. I can't find my way through this job. I can't find my way through this relationship, through this habit in my life, through whatever else it is. I can't. Just acknowledge it. That's where I am. And then go to step two and say, will you help me? So can you just kind of step by step as you examine your life, just say, hey, God, this is where I am. This is where I lack full power. And then just begin to ask for him to partner with you and be a part of that help. It is really convenient that the prayer that you just prayed is the exact prayer that you should pray every time you come to communion. That's what communion is about. If you have no boulders in your life and you can control everything in your backpack and it's all fine and you're in full control over everything, you don't need this gift. This is for people with boulders. This is for people that say, I face things bigger than me that I cannot manage. That is what this gift is for. So if you don't need it, then don't come forward for it. But if you can say, I have a boulder in my life, I have something big enough in my life, then this is where you want to be. Right? And here is that step two of saying, Jesus, I want to open up my boundaries to let you in. I'm opening up the boundary of my mouth and I'm taking you in, and you have the freedom to come inside my identity, to come inside my backpack and my boundaries, and then begin to help me. I'm not putting limits on you, Jesus, saying only this little corner here. I don't need you anywhere else. Like, I'll take you into all of me. And I want you to help me make choices, help me manage emotions, help me decide what to desire and hope for and dream about. I want to welcome you into all of these places. That is our purpose here. So I invite you, if you have those boulders, to come and to welcome Jesus and to be a part of every aspect of who you are. On the night that Jesus was betrayed, he took bread. He broke it. He gave it to his disciples. He said, "Take and eat. This is my body given for you for the forgiveness of your sins. Do this in remembrance of me." Then after supper, he took a cup. He gave it to them and said, "Drink from this, all of you. This cup is a new promise in my blood shed for you. It's there for the forgiveness of your sins." I invite you to welcome Jesus in.